The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Back here for hour three of four, last day of the week for the George Show here at 710 KNUS. We'll be back with you on Monday, if not in the saddle right here in town, perhaps from an undisclosed location. We'll be giving the technology a shot on Monday, but I'll be with you Monday through Friday of next week as well. I want to go to the VIP line. Something got released yesterday that I have been working on with a much smarter, more experienced, better-haired prosecutor, a guy named Mitch Morrissey, former DA out of Denver, and it was an update to a report that, Mitch, has it been like 2 years or something since we were 1.5 years? When did we put out that first crime report?
I think it was almost 2 years ago, George, and is better haired a word?
It is now. It's hyphenated, and it ends with not an ED, but an apostrophe D.
Oh, so now you create words too.
Just like Dr. Seuss. Mitch Morrissey, former district attorney for 12 years and a career prosecutor out of Denver, now leading the way. We could do a whole show, by the way, Mitch, on the stuff that you do with the DNA and the genealogy and how many cases United Connect has solved. Even when I was district attorney, cases you helped us solve and we prosecuted and got into the end zone on. But I'm not having you on for that. Not yet.
Oh, and actually, on a press conference yesterday, I did from Fair Play. We did it via Zoom.
Nice.
I was testifying in one of the cases that we helped solve up there where two women were killed in 1982. So I can't really go into it. Hopefully no jurors are
They're
in the courtroom working.
Any word on where that case is procedurally, like closings today? They closed yesterday or something?
No, I believe they were hoping to get through their witnesses and people's case rest yesterday afternoon. But, you know, I was out of there right after we finished our conference. They loaned me an office, and it was nice of them to do that. And then I headed back down to Denver. But it seemed to be going well. You know, as a witness, you really only have a piece of what's going on because you can't listen to other witnesses. You know all the rules around.
I do. I've been a witness once when I was on active duty, and it's a bit disempowering. I mean, you don't feel like you can just say the things you want to say. You know, you're being controlled. And so I imagine you got cross-examined too. That's just, I don't know, it's just a little uncomfortable.
It was, I got to hand it to the guy that cross-examined me. He was extremely careful. Because he knew I knew that case inside and out. And so I don't want to cause any problems with the case, but certainly was dancing around some things that I thought were kind of misleading. And, I stayed within my lanes. But, you know, like, for instance, you don't have any personal knowledge how this evidence was collected. And I was like, well, are you asking me if I collected the glove? Because I was in law school when this happened. So you talk about that I'm older and more seasoned than you. Well,
yeah.
I mean, that's what I was doing back then.
Yeah.
Actually.
Right.
So,
well, listen,
he was, yeah, no, I didn't collect the glove.
Yeah. Not this time. I brought you on because we did this crime report, and then we've been updating it periodically as more data becomes available, and to give folks a benchmark. I'm going to take a little bit of credit for this on our behalf, Mitch, and that is I don't know that the metro area or the state was having as the kind of conversation about the crime rate before that initial report as they have been afterwards. Like, it has really put this thing on the map, and now everybody looks around and they're like, you know what, I know someone whose car was stolen. I know someone who was the victim of a break-in. I know, and it's becoming this growing crime tsunami. And so the updated report we put out yesterday really just focused on one single aspect of crime, and that was car theft in Colorado. Talk to us about why car theft in Colorado matters.
Well, first of all, George, I agree with you 100%. If it wasn't for the Common Sense Institute stepping up and helping us put out these reports, I mean, It's an incredible organization. And I mean, you want to talk about being on the forefront of things that people are concerned about. And auto theft, although there are leaders in this state that I don't think it's a big deal. You know, I posted our report yesterday on social media, and an individual sarcastically said, oh, it's just auto theft. You know, everybody has insurance. Let the insurance pay for it. And I think that's the attitude of the leaders in Colorado. And of course, in a very well thought individual said, well, yeah, but you know, when someone steals your car, they steal your livelihood. And especially if you live in a rural area where you don't have access to a bus or you can't even get to work and then you lose your job. And of course, then, you know, the woman came back in and, you know, indicated that I know her. She's the wife of a Denver police officer, and she was sarcastically saying what she did. But, you know, this is a very real crime. And the idea that, oh, well, we just, you know, just let insurance take care of it. Well, that's what costs people money. That's why Colorado has one of the highest insurance rates for cars in the state of in the United States. When you're number one in this type of crime, it costs us a lot of money. And I think the title of the report, Moving Towards $1 Billion, I think you pointed out yesterday, we're going to be well above that this year.
We are. I think when you factor in total costs, which isn't just the value of the vehicles, that's what's approaching $1 billion. When you factor in all the costs in terms of lost time, inconvenience, all the other costs associated with replacing a stolen car, we're going to be up between $1.5 and $2 billion is my guess. The other thing about what you said that is infuriating for me to hear, and I've heard elected officials say that too, well, there's insurance. Or even our attorney general who has said in response to this, well, you should get special insurance for your catalytic converter or get more insurance for your car. It is ignorant in this way. This report reveals that 85% of the vehicles targeted and stolen by the bad guys are $25,000 or less. A huge majority of those are under, I think, $15,000. Those are not cars being driven around by the governor or by, you know, congressmen. These are cars being driven around by everyday working class Coloradans, many of whom have one car. You and I, my guess is, Mitch, your car gets stolen. Your wife has a car you could borrow in a pinch. Same thing for me. These folks' car gets stolen. That's it. Bye-bye.
Yep. That's absolutely true. And how do you get the kids to school? You know, a shortage of school bus drivers. How do you get your kids to school? How do you get to the doctor? How do you get to the grocery store? Let alone, how do you keep getting to work so you can continue to pay for all the things you have to do these days with inflation and everything? It is a big problem. And, you know, George, I got to tell you, the silence on this at the state level, it was something that yesterday when I talked about and, you know, was quoted in the newspaper about, you know, the silence there, just the deafening silence of doing anything about this really, really concerns me. And I think it really goes to the leadership that we currently have in the state of Colorado. Now, we're seeing cities step up. We're seeing the city of Aurora pass an ordinance to try to address this problem. But do we really want to have a checkerboard of cities that have different laws and rules around auto theft, or should it be taking place at the state level and something be done about this motor vehicle theft rate?
We're talking with Mitch Morrissey, former district attorney for Denver. I agree with you that the state has been silent on this because they don't have an answer. They have spent every year since 2014, and I'm going to ask you to describe what happened in 2014 and since then that has made this such a permissive environment for car thieves, but they've spent every year making excuses for offenders and giving greater reasons why these folks should never have to spend a day in jail on the front end of an allegation or on the back end of a conviction. It's what's led us here.
Yeah, and when you talk about 2014, the legislature they didn't decriminalize it. They just reduced the level of felony for both felony levels of auto theft. They dropped them down to the lowest level felony. They dropped it down a couple of places, the other down to to just a class 5 felony. And then, of course, they're constantly increasing the values, which our study, obviously, we talked a lot about the values of the cars that are being taken. And again, the point you make, that has really nothing to do with the costs that go along with being the victim of an auto theft. But that's when, if you track this statistically and you look at the charts, 2014, boom, auto theft starts to just go up right after they passed and that legislation came into effect. And then, you know, they fiddle with the statute again a little bit in 2019, and you see another major increase. So every time the legislature has done the things that they do, we are seeing a greater problem when it comes to motor vehicle theft.
It is so pronounced here in Colorado that of the top 10 cities for car theft rates in the entire country, four of them are here: Denver, Aurora, Westminster, and Pueblo. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think last year it wasn't Pueblo, percentage-wise, a little higher even than Denver, which seems to be, you know, auto theft central when it comes to cars that are stolen throughout the state. They're either recovered in Denver or they're taken from Denver. And I, you know, when it came down to looking at actual neighborhoods, we did that in the study. And DIA, I'd never really considered much of a neighborhood when I was the district attorney, but it is probably one of the worst places in the country when it comes to auto theft. Obviously, a lot of cars parked out there, people leaving them for a couple of days, but also all of the major car rental places are out there. So there's parking lots full of their cars. And, you know, I dealt with cases through my career that the cars being stolen from Stapleton. Obviously, my career lapsed over into the development of DIA, but also DIA. And they actually file a lot of auto thefts from those car dealerships. So it's really a place. I guess they could be stealing airplanes there, but, you know, that's another thing. There's a lot of there, but there's a lot of cars there, not a lot of people in the neighborhood, but, you know, it's probably one of the number one places in the country where cars are stolen, then this crime takes place.
And that's because it's number one in Denver and likely number one in the state of Colorado. The only reason we can't say definitively for Colorado, but common sense leads you there, no pun intended, is that none of the other cities outside the Denver metro area are big enough that could have numbers that would dwarf this rate. It's incredible to me that it's such a target-rich environment, and yet we seem to have done very little to successfully deter car thieves. There's a guy named Mike Greenwell, who I know you're familiar with, the commander of the Colorado Metropolitan Auto Theft Task Force. He had a quote that we put in this report that was, I can't remember the exact number, Mitch, but it was something like 97% of the folks that we're arresting for car theft have a history of car theft.
Yeah, 97% of the people who've been arrested in the last 3 years for auto theft have multiple arrests for auto theft. And I think that dovetails into what we were recommending. And, you know, of course, people will say, well, you guys are just two old prosecutors.
Right.
You just been locking people up and throwing away the key, all those kind of things I always hear when people talk about it. But the other thing I always hear is, oh, yeah, my car was stolen. It was trashed. I didn't get back money to pay for it. I couldn't even buy a car that was anywhere close. Most people have car insurance, but they don't have the expensive type that would replace your car.
That's right. Great point.
Get you to buy another car. These are people that are multiple car thieves, multiple offenders. I spoke with the DNA expert who was about to go on after I testified. We couldn't talk about her testimony. But when I mentioned we were going to talk about our report, she has one guy that's good for 30 auto thefts where she has made him on DNA. And he was still at large. She says, I hope he's been arrested, but I have 30 cases. So every time he steals another car, and this is across the state of Colorado, I test his DNA. It matches him. It's on the steering wheel. It's on the gear shift. He likes to drink beers. He likes to smoke and leave a cigarette butt. So she says, I've got DNA in 30 different cars. And, you know, I know full well when he gets arrested, he'll get right back out. And, you know, that's just the nature of the way the criminal justice system is dealing with these repeat auto thieves. They know it. They know they're going to be out probably on a no bond, PR bond the next day. And, you know, they're going to need a car. Also spoke with a reporter yesterday who, you know, he's kind of tracked the history of the PR bonds of the auto thief and carjacker from Pueblo to Denver.
Oh, yeah.
All the way up from Pueblo to Denver. He got PR bonds in Pueblo. He jacked another car, actually stole it at gunpoint from someone in Highlands Ranch, got into Denver, got pulled over by the police. They took him down for part of the robbery and also for having the stolen car. Got a PR bond in Denver. Attacked another woman for her car in Denver, got in a bit of a high-speed chase, arrested again. Finally, no PR bond. And
amazing.
That's what it takes. I mean, this guy is pointing a BB gun that looks like an AR at people, robbing them of their cars, stealing cars when they – and an interesting thing, George, he made a comment – that, well, he had to steal a car because he needed to make a drug run up to Denver. And we covered some of that in our report,
of
the secondary crimes that we're seeing. And there's an increase there, again, always an increase. And, you know, I would like to see the day where we do one of these reports where there's a decrease. It's almost depressing to constantly see every 6 months. Yeah, well, we're up again. We're going to still be number one in auto thefts. The other thing that the people that listen to you may want to do is look at the part of the report where we talk about the top 10 vehicles, makes and models, where the cars are stolen. Some of these cars are easier to steal than others. Some of the older cars are easier to steal than the newer cars. Like, for instance, a 1997 Honda Accord, it's in the top 10.
Yep.
So we put the year and we put the make and model, and these are the cars that those thieves are out there looking for. And they're also the cars that are hardest to insure when it goes to, because the insurance companies know these cars are easily stolen and they're in the top 10 list.
And,
so
they cover a bunch of different years, like a 2004 Ford F-250, the 2006 F-350, the 2005 GMC Sierra, the 2017 Hyundai Sonata. They're all in there. And the 97 Honda Accord, you're right. I think I owned a 97 Honda Accord at one point. It was a great car. I wouldn't steal it. But it was an awesome car. The place to go to find this report, and it's an easy 20-page read. And if you're like me, you're looking for a lot of pictures and graphs, this thing has it. The place to go is Common Sense Institute, CO. That's for Colorado. Common Sense Institute, CO. .org. Mitch, I know that we've got more updates coming as the data becomes available. It's just a conversation I want to continue to have with these folks because, as you pointed out, the folks in charge at the state level of government, they're not interested in talking about this.
Right, George, but I think we have made some headway. You talked about a new dashboard with me this morning.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, that's what we called for in our first report was a more openness when it came to things like, you know, the rate that you file cases at, the rate that you don't accept cases from your law enforcement agency, those types of stats that people need to be able to access. The media needs to be able to access to write, you know, reports about the kind of things that we're seeing around crime. And, you know, I think that our report kind of helped push things forward when it kind of comes to that dashboard. You know more about it than I do. But I think that's an important change that we're starting to see because the Common Sense Institute started talking about this incredible crime rate in our state. And I think that there are some people that are saying, okay, they're right. We need to start doing some of the things they're suggesting.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we're going to continue to have this conversation. So thanks for taking time out of your day to be on the show, Mitch.
No problem, George. You have a great weekend.
You too. Take care. Talk to you soon. That was former district attorney out of Denver, Mitch Morrissey, my partner in crime, both figuratively and literally, when it comes to the CSI report. Go check it out at commonsenseinstituteco.org. The other person to check out is a guy that we interviewed in studio here for a wonderful 20-minute segment named Mitch Floria of The Art of Granite. You can go check out theartofgranite.com. Here's the bottom line. If you're thinking about upgrading the interior of your house, there's a couple ways to go. Maybe the biggest way is to focus on the kitchen. That's the gathering place for the family, for friends, everybody that comes over. We all hang out in the kitchen. The counter is the first, biggest, bestest thing that you can upgrade. You can do that there. You can do it in your master bathroom, heck, any bathroom. And if you're talking about countertops, the dude to go see, the guy to take your business to, because one, you're going to get a great product, but you're also helping out a great American, is Mitch Morrissey. Guy's been doing this business now since he came over, started this business after he came over from Romania, grew up under Ceausescu till at least the age of 9 or 10, remembers being under the gray communist dictators out there, and then decided, hey, I want to go to America and make my fortune there. And he did. It's such a great story. I can't remember the day we had him out here. It could have been Monday. You got to go back and listen to that podcast. But when you're in the business of changing your countertops, dial this number. And when I say dial, that's the old rotary phone. Press these buttons on your phone and it will ring Mitch. He gives out his cell phone number. That's the kind of personal business this craftsman and expert gives. 303-386-5919. 303-386-5919. Here's the bottom line too. Guy can do anything. God-made, man-made stuff, quartz, marble, granite, fill in the blank. He can get it done in a way that you will be happy with. And you'll say, man, this is really much more beautiful than I thought. Also, if you mention me and KNUS, my name's George, you receive a bathroom countertop for free with the purchase of your kitchen countertop. Or you get a kitchen bathroom sink for free with the purchase of any countertop package. That's artofgranite.com, artofgranite.com. When we come back, there are a ton of texts have poured in about the topic we had before, Mitch. I'll get to some of those things. I'm also going to try to update us on the situation in Ukraine by going to our official, unofficial foreign correspondent, Polina, if we can get her up on the WhatsApp. It's George Brockman on The George Show, 710 KNUS. It is Funky Friday on The George Brockman Show, 710 KNUS. My thanks to Mitch Morrissey, former district attorney for Denver. Somebody texted in and said, when you were doing the Art of Granite live read, you referred to Mitch Floria as Mitch Morrissey, both great Mitches, and to the extent that they have sons, they're sons of Mitches. Isn't that interesting? Nonetheless, Mitch Floria, of course, The Art of Granite. Mitch Morrissey, The Art of Prosecuting through the District Attorney's Office. My thanks to him. You go check out that report at CommonSenseInstituteCO. Got to remember the CO for Colorado. CommonSenseInstituteCO.org. Working right now to try to get Polina on the phone from formerly of Ukraine. Now she's a refugee in one of the adjoining countries. I can't remember if it was Slovenia or Slovakia. There's a difference, by the way, folks. If you look at a map, they're not touching. We're going to see if we can't get her on. I wanted to revisit an issue that we started to discuss in the 7 o'clock hour, and lots of texts coming in. Here was the issue. Two things that came out of the Mar-a-Lago search that are worth updating. And that is, one, the Department of Justice has made the decision. I disagree, but I understand their logic in seeking to appeal the Trump-appointed judge's decision to grant a special master to review the 33 boxes of documents taken during the execution of the search warrant on August the 8th at Mar-a-Lago. Now, there were two portions of that order. One was special master to review things for either attorney-client privilege, executive privilege, if it exists, all that stuff. The other was the stay on the use by the FBI of the documents seized for further investigative purposes. Now, they filed a motion with that court to say, please undo the stay. Here's a whole bunch of reasons why. They're contained in our 20-page argument. And then they gave a notice of appeal to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. And if whoever wins or loses there, they may kick it all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States. That's legit. That could happen. It won't happen tomorrow or this week, but it could happen before November. And that makes it a bit problematic. The other story that was released was from the Washington Post. And there were some, it looks like, DOJ-related leaks. I know that comes as a shock about the sensitivity level of some of these documents and descriptions that were given. Now, some folks have texted in after our conversation at 7 or like, oh, the documents are so sensitive, that they had to be seized, but the FBI can leak them? It's like, no, man, they're not leaking the documents themselves. They're leaking descriptions of what the documents were from an FBI property list of items that were seized and some other things. And then people familiar, I hate this term, people familiar with the matter give their statements to the Washington Post. Now, for them to rely upon that for publication, generally, they have to be people who have provided information in the past that was credible and verifiable. And also they have to be people sometimes that are backed up by other sources that they don't even know about who are giving similar information. So it's not foolproof. I'm not telling you it can't be garbage. I'm just saying it's unlikely that this is 100% false. Okay, so here's the description. Some of the seized documents detail top secret U.S. operations, so closely guarded that many senior national security officials are kept in the dark about them. Yikes, folks. Yikes. These are things that were taken from the White House and put in boxes and stored in an unlocked room at a golf resort in Florida. Now, some folks texted in and said, but he's got Secret Service protection. They're not there to protect papers. They're there to protect the man. End of story. And the suggestion that because he has Secret Service protection around the clock to protect him, somehow this is a super secret place, that's just not true. That's just not true. A document describing a foreign government's military defenses, including its nuclear capabilities. That's kind of a big deal, man. Now, if that's a publicly accessible document, okay. I mean, if it's just like France has nuclear weapons, who cares? But it sounds like it's more than that. We don't know the classification of those documents. We don't know if they were top secret, SCI, secret, confidential, don't know. But we do know that it contains this kind of information, and the risks are huge, right? Risks are to the relationship to our friends and allies who either gave us that information and think, oh my God, please tell me you're not storing this next to the pro shop, or they put those relationships at risk because we got the information without their permission, and we do stuff like that. We check up on our buds. It would be reckless not to. The other thing that would be reckless, though, is to make the pronouncement, and Trump hasn't yet done this as far as I know, everything I walked out of the White House with was instantly declassified, especially if it includes secret operations so secret that members of national security don't know them. You'd have to agree that's crazy. Now, I get it. A lot of folks are texting, you can't trust the FBI, the leak, they can't, Russia hoax. I get it. I agree with all that stuff. Russia hoax, it was a credibility killer for the FBI. I agree with you. The mishandling of the investigation and failure to prosecute Hillary Clinton for what she did with those servers, absolutely a credibility killer. Not for the 35,000 members who work the FBI, because you can't paint all of them with that brush, but for the people at the top that made those decisions, yep, goodbye, good riddance. See ya. Go do your thing at CNN. But you shouldn't be in charge of anything to do with the monopoly on governmental power when it comes to investigating crimes or counterterrorism. Get out. Get it. But that can't be the only answer that we have. This information is so bad and damning, it must be false. I now question the source. It can't be true. I leave open the possibility that it may be misdescribed, mischaracterized, even exaggerated. I leave open that possibility. But the question you got to ask yourselves is, if this is legit, now what? If it's true, and it is super sensitive, super secret stuff that put our allies at risk and those relationships at risk, do we just shrug it off and go, oh, well, you know, the FBI has been targeting Trump for years, so this is okay. That can't be the answer. Here's some more text here. Oh, people talking about the GOP. You are bashing Trump by continuing to, quote, beating the drum about we need to make Trump irrelevant, end quote. Nice try. Have a nice weekend. This is someone who bailed to go listen to sports. Probably not a regular listener as it is anyway. But I've had two of those. Why are you bashing Trump? How is this bashing Trump? How is this bashing Trump? What's the alternative? We either don't talk about it. It's in the news. It is a matter of national importance. It's a matter of political importance. Even here, we don't talk about it. Or when we read it, do we find every reason in the world to discount it and dismiss it? Isn't this the path to us losing in November, to not take things like this seriously? Here's one. Fair is fair. Obama had 30 million documents he took from the White House stored in his five mansions. None of that was in violation of the rules. I'm aware of nothing that suggests he took top secret stuff where he didn't go through the normal process. And oh, by the way, a lot of this was for the library. I don't recall him declaring these are mine because I left the White House with them. Somebody has said that, but it wasn't Obama. What's that? Billy just chimed in with something.
Yeah, Obama does not have possession and did not take possession of those. That is a myth that is out there.
Oh, there you go.
Those documents were transferred to the National Archives in Chicago. Obama does not and has never had possession of them. Those documents are still in the possession of the National Archives, the same people that want the documents back that Trump took from the White House.
I did not know that about the Obama stuff, but I appreciate the myth aspect of it. There's a lot of that that goes on around here. Here's another couple of them. What percentage of all leaked items on Trump in the last, I can't imagine it's something other than years, turns out to be true? All of it has been twisted to benefit people opposing Trump. Notice the 1-6 committee theater isn't making much news. No, it didn't make much news, and I think for legitimate reasons, and that is it was just poorly staffed. I've said that before. But it doesn't mean that the information that they generated was untrue. It doesn't mean that it was a lie. Again, this gets back to a common theme through all these conversations. There is a cult of personality thing here, a worship of this man that does not allow people to entertain for a moment a single negative fact about him. And there are those out there. You may be one of them. It may be that he's never done anything wrong. Everything anyone's ever accused him of is just flat wrong, or we make excuses for it. What other political figure in your life would you be willing to do that for? Just this guy. If this information is true, and if I'm willing to capitalize the I and the F, if this information is true, the description is accurate, now what? Now what do we do? Do we just shrug and say, well, you know, the other leaks have been false. Well, you know, Russia, you know, Hillary. And we just move on? Maybe that's the answer. I'm not saying prosecute this guy. And when people say I'm Trump bashing, I'm not bashing the president. Dude's in charge of Mar-a-Lago. Dude has access to these documents that he shouldn't have had access to. Dude was the president. Dude had access to the documents up there. Did he order these documents to be seized and hidden from people? I don't know. I don't know any evidence like that. I don't care. And you shouldn't either. The real question is, why did he have them? Should he have had them? Who put them there? Who knew about it? Those are the only questions that matter. Not how do we defend the president from these scurrilous attacks. They turn out to be false. Let's go hunt down the people that did the leaks anyway. I want to get them anyway. Find them, drum them out of the FBI. You are done, or the DOJ. Get out, career over. And if it's prosecutable, we should prosecute those people. The last group in the world that should be leaking information about anything ever is the Department of Justice. Merrick Garland should come out, and so should Christopher Wray, and decry these leaks right now. And they should say, we're going to do an internal investigation to find the sons of bees that did this, and we're going to run them out of the business. That's how you get back your integrity and your credibility. But the mum's the word on this? That's not helpful. But it also doesn't defeat the question, what do we do? What do we do now that this information is out there? If it turns out to be true, does this change your opinion? Some folks have said, hey, listen, isn't this just a thing to keep Trump's name in the press? Yeah, I'm sure it is. And he loves that. That guy loves reading about himself and seeing himself discussed on Fox News and everywhere else. Dude loves it. Even if it's negative, dude loves it. Gives him a lot of fodder for these big public discussions that he has at these well-attended gatherings, no doubt about it. Here's more. I think it's an important topic because of its news value, but there is nothing in the news that draws a definitive conclusion. Well, there's nothing in the news that draws a definitive conclusion ever. This is the same news organizations that say things like the Aurora Theater shooter was the alleged shooter. Okay, yes, he's alleged to have been a shooter. But we knew he was the shooter from the moment we walked into the courtroom. Everybody knew it. So, yeah, definitive, never. Here's one. Judicial Watch calls the raid a political raid. So does Dan Bongino. Oh, well, then, there it is. If those two groups say it, by God, that's it. They don't have a political axe to grind here. Why not call it a raid? I don't have a political axe to grind here. If you are going to cling to this term that it was a raid, please describe to me how the FBI could have executed the search warrant in a less raid-like fashion. Tell me what they could have done differently. And nobody has texted in or called in ever to give me a better way for them to have done it. All they do is to cry the FBI, Christopher Wray, Merrick Garland, me, everybody else. But Dan Bongino and Judicial Watch call it a raid. Well, by God, it's a raid. Because they've said it's a raid. What the hell do they know? What's their alternative? What do they offer? This is what should have happened. My guess is nothing, because it's just so easy to criticize. Listen, we're going to come back. The texts just keep pouring in. Let's do this. Some of you texters, pick up your phone and dial 303-696-1971. Help set me straight. Help me get the idea here of what I'm thinking about that is just so wrong in my approach to this. And I presume every single call is going to be about, you can't trust these people. And that'll be the end of it. It won't be, if it turns out to be true, yes, action should be taken. If it turns out to be true, yes, it's a problem. If it turns out to be true, yes, I was wrong about the FBI. Nobody has the guts to pick up the phone and say that. 303-696-1971. It's not really a dare, but it's a dare. I just don't think anybody has the guts to take me on this issue, because you know what I know. If it's true, it's damning. Maybe not for the president directly, but dang, it makes the decision to store them in the room next to the pro shop at Mar-a-Lago. I'm sort of making that up. Hugely reckless. Hugely reckless. Here's something that's not reckless, and that is when you're in the mood to sell your home, and you might be right now because interest rates are going up, you're thinking of getting in that dream home, you call our friend Gay Ribble with Empower Home Team of Keller Williams Realty DTC. Gay's been doing this for decades, locally grown product right up there in Arvada, where she stuck around to raise a family and to raise a business. And she wants to put that expertise, that experience, that commitment, that dedication to work for you. And she does it when you look at GayHasTheBuyers.com. You go to that website, Gay, G-A-Y-E, HasTheBuyers.com, and you find out she does things that others don't. Guarantees in writing to sell your home at 100% of its asking price at the time frame that you dictate. She did it for Adam and Littleton, Wayne and Lisa in Centennial. She'll buy the house if she can't get it sold. That's just what she does. That's guaranteed in writing. Who else does that in this day and age? You call 833-301-SOLD, 833-301-SOLD, and you get Gay and her team of fighters for you. Also, Gay, great human being, wholly passionate about adoption, which matters to me. I imagine there's a bunch of you out there who it's touched your lives, it's touched mine, it's touched hers. And that just makes her a good person. And who doesn't want to do good business with a good person? Check out GayHasTheBuyers.com, G-A-Y-E HasTheBuyers.com. When we come back, we'll get to more of the text. We'll see if anyone has the guts to pick up the phone and call. It's George Brockler on The George Show, 710 KNUS. Ending hour three here of four on Funky Friday on The George Show, 710 KNUS. Again, still nobody with the courage to call in, but plenty of texters, a ton of texters. Here are some. The only solution at this time is for the government to arrest and charge Trump or declare him as faultless immediately. Why are those the only two options? Why in the world would you say, you wouldn't say that about someone we thought was good for murder? Either arrest him before the investigation is complete or declare him faultless. We don't declare anybody faultless in the system. That's not how it's set up. You're presumed faultless when you're accused of a crime until you're proven guilty. But this, what about an ongoing investigation? Maybe he never gets accused of anything because they just don't have enough evidence to accuse him of doing something wrong with these documents. But all of a sudden now we have to treat him differently than every other person that would ever be investigated for a crime and either charge him right now before the investigation is complete or declare him to be faultless, which no agency does ever. I mean, maybe there's a few exceptions when they've accused someone of a crime and it turns out they weren't there at the scene or something. But my goodness, why is that it? The answer is it would clear up the real point of this. Well, I don't know what that means. What's the real point of this? And then here's someone who, of course, big Trumper, who said Trump should not have access to those documents? The Democrats. He was the president, for goodness sakes. So what? He had the ability to possess those documents right up until Joe Biden took the oath of office on January 20th, 2021. And then he's just like you and me. He doesn't get to have access to those. So who said Trump should not have access to those documents? The law. The law. Can't have the top secret. Can't have the secret. Can't have the confidential. That's it right there. Here's one. Colorado election integrity is extreme. No one leak from the Trump locked storage. What? Not one leak from the Trump locked storage room. I don't know what that means. They were there by appointment 60 days earlier. We've not read a thing about any dispute over any documents. No armed raid was necessary. A subpoena, if needed, is okay. Heads up, folks. He got a grand jury subpoena, and it was not complied with. Now what? They were there by appointment earlier. They got documents handed to them by one of Trump's goofy lawyers who assured them and signed a document attesting to the fact, that's it, folks. We got nothing else. We don't have any more classified, top secret, secret information here. Trust us. We've done, their words, diligent search. Now what? Is your answer, Texter, that we should just take them at their word and then move on? Because we didn't take them at their word, and guess what we found? They lied. It's really only one of two things. The attorney lied, or they are so incompetent as to not have done a diligent search and did not know what was in those boxes. Those are the two options. But should our business just be, well, we were there by appointment. They gave us some stuff. We don't think it's complete, but ew, it's Trump. Let's just move on. Not a chance. Not a freaking chance. And the idea of they should have gone by subpoena, they tried less than a subpoena. They tried phone calls. They tried letters. They tried meetings. And then they tried a grand jury subpoena. Dude straight-armed them. Nope. You got everything. What's left? And if it's these documents, that's the real turn here. If it's the documents that are described, and I get it, it's if it's speculative. If it's documents of this quality, and we don't know the classification, does that change your mind at all? Or do you still go, nope, don't care. I don't care what it was. It could be detailed plans on how to disarm our nuclear arsenal. I don't care. This thing, texts keep rolling in. Folks, pick up the phone. Give us a call. Let's have a conversation. It's hard to have a conversation over text. I love them, by the way. We'll do it. Let's talk more about it here when we come back. Last hour of the week, George Brockler, George Show. Our number, write it down, 303-696-1971 at 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.